I have to consent. I've consented. Oh boy.
Here we go, Mary.
Oh, we're back.
It's season four of the Melrose Place cast, everybody.
Oh my God, are we gonna get sued?
No, this is a parody podcast, so we're not going to get sued. And as a reminder to everybody, going into season four, if you're still with us, this is not a parody. I'm sorry, not a recap podcast. It is a parody podcast.
Yeah. What are we parodying?
Anything that would get us sued.
Okay, great. Okay. So season four. Oh my God, I just can't wait to get started. I mean, we left with such a cliffhanger.
The actual bombing.
Is there a bombing? I don't know yet.
There was a bombing, Mary. We saw Kimberly press the button.
Well, I didn't see anything explode.
And yes, we did, because as we determined, the Lifetime movie of Melrose Place was canon. You saw the bombing. Kimberly is floating in the pool.
Oh boy.
So that's official. And you know what else I'm so excited about? Darren Star. Thank God he's gone and off to
Oh,
Jersey or wherever.
wherever he went.
You know, like out by where Sully landed that airplane.
Oh, those geese were a real problem.
They were a real problem. So with Darren's
Star.
Star? Darren Star. Did I say Darren Spelling?
You almost did. It
Darren
would rhyme with
Star,
Aaron spelling, so
out of
okay.
here. We got
90% of people wanting to stay.
we got a good 12 characters on the credit scene. That's more than there's ever been.
That's crazy. This intro is getting a little long. I think we should get started.
I got so lost. Anyway, season four of the Melrose Place cast begins right now.
Thank God. Hello and welcome to the Melrose Place cast. Today we're talking about season four, episode 21, titled Devil in a Wet Dress, once again in poor taste. My name is Mary.
Indeed. At least it wasn't Devil in a Blue Dress.
Well, that wouldn't have made any sense.
They could have put her in a blue dress, and then they would have matched the song, right? Isn't that the song, Devil in a Blue Dress?
Yeah, I mean that's what they're playing on, but
Yeah. So, see? I agree. They did great.
oh boy. Oh boy.
Mary, this episode, ooh, so much fun. I'm excited. I'm excited to get to it.
I mean, that's true every time. But I'm glad that it's also true this time for you.
Okay, but listeners, something has happened that has derailed our progress.
Oh no.
And that is 50 fucking Risa Tisa videos, of which I watched everyone. Mary, have you been watching?
The what?
Oh my God, you don't know about Risa Tisa?
I got a lot going on.
Risa Tisa, this is a TikTok. Do you have TikTok?
No.
Oh, okay. There's your trouble. You'll want to get
Nope.
it just for this.
Done now. I can't have any more things. Like,
She, my nephew, the obnoxious gay one that is a guest, said he said you got to watch this series. And I looked at it and I said, "There's 50 videos. I'm not watching 50 videos." And he said, "Yeah." And each one is 10 minutes long. And I was like, Nick, I'm not doing this. And within 2 days, I was texting him at 5 a.m. because I was watching another video, number 38, and I was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe it!"
that's like as long as the Lord of the Rings, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 6 hours. She did this. Here's the thing: she no 9.5 hours. She it's the series is Who the Fuck Did I Marry? And it's about being married to a pathological liar, and she just takes us along her journey, and it is gripping. But ladies, gentlemen, everyone in between listening to this podcast, that has pulled my focus and attention.
Okay.
So I apologize for the delay. Anyway, that's the one thing. Mary, you've got to watch it, and we should do a reaction pod to every single video. What do you think?
I'm not currently available.
Okay, fine.
Maybe you could do that with your nephew.
No. Okay. I am around him too much. Two bits of fan mail.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the first one is in print in a nice thick stationery, and the exterior says thank you with kind of a floral design, kind of an ugly floral design, if you ask me, but whatever.
Oh.
And it's from Gail and Matt.
Oh.
Yeah. So Gail, sweet Gail, got married, as you know.
I do know that.
To this gentleman named Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a party. I couldn't make it to the party. But I mailed a box. And they specifically said, we don't want wedding presents. We want donations to a children's organization Gail's involved with. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I got the thank you note. And I think our listeners want to hear it. Are you ready?
I can't wait.
Tej and family. By the way, handwriting, not great. Not great. Clearly written.
They're writing a lot of notes.
It's written.
Tired.
Yeah, it's written by Matt. Gail didn't even write this one.
Well, that's, you know what? You're married. You're supposed to share responsibilities.
Okay, well, Tej and family. We're sorry you weren't able to join us for our party. Thank you for the clothes donation. Puzzle. And the corn. We had the corn for dinner and it was fine.
Jesus Christ.
The clothes will go to good use at the school where Gail works. Sincerely, Gail and Matt. So it's good to know the corn was fine. Yeah, I put in a can of corn in the box.
You know what? I think getting a review of fine for a can of corn is more than you hoped for. So.
Here was the question. I promised the post office there was nothing perishable in there. Do you think I committed postal fraud?
Probably. Yeah.
Shit. Shit. All right, Mary. And we've got one more email and then we can get. This is from the same person who emailed us last week.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Do you remember she was in the middle of the slog of season two? And I said, you didn't have to say our season was a slog. And you said maybe she was talking about the show, not our podcast, whatever. And our podcast fills her funeral home with quiet laughter.
Yes, I liked that. Yes. Please.
All right. So this same person, Mary plus Tej. Okay. So it's a Mary and not plus, right? Like this looks like a tree carving, but whatever. I don't judge. I don't judge fan mail, as you know, Mary.
We're excited to get any and all.
Yeah. Except for those fucking emails at the beginning. That's like, it's not Kelly Kapowski. Still mad. Still mad.
Send more.
Okay. All right. So Mary plus Tej. So I'm working here quietly in my parlor on President's Day, Monday, enjoying episode 420, when I almost dropped a purple urn on my high-heeled foot as I heard you mention myself in my goofy email. Thank God the urn was empty. I'm so thrilled to be a fan, and I'm even more thrilled at the option to be a special guest.
Ooh.
I'm going to check in with Jane to see if I can get a sneak peek of her jungle designs before Richard hijacks them for his volcano fashion show. I don't know what that means.
I don't either, but I'm okay. Excited.
I think she's ahead of us. I want to look my best as I talk about all things daddy and laundry room hijinks.
There's so many daddies.
So please sign me up whenever it works best. For I am very flexible and feel I know you both so well.
Well, that's marvelous.
As Michael says, I refuse to believe Michael said this, unless it was the first half of season three when Sandy was still around. As Michael says, quote, call me old fashioned, but I'd like to know who I'm sleeping with.
That's a good pull. That's great.
Yeah. No, that's after she just said she knows us both so well. And I feel like we might have to set some boundaries. But yes, Elizabeth, Mary Elizabeth will be the surprise, no longer a surprise, the guest for episode 425. I confirmed that with her. I said, we'll let you know when we get close. It might take a minute. You know, Risa Tisa. And she said, looking forward to our whoresgiving.
Now, this is a level of attention to detail that I can appreciate.
Yes. Listen, when we were making memes watching Melrose Place over 10 years ago now, almost 10 years ago, and we came up with the phrase whoresgiving, could you have imagined that a decade later, someone would drop a purple urn on their high-heeled foot and think of whoresgiving in Oregon?
Can I tell you a funny cremation story? It's short. It's short.
Oh my God. Mary.
You might enjoy it. It's short.
Wait a minute. We just need, I want to just step back and evaluate the genre of joke first.
Okay.
A funny cremation story.
Yeah.
Okay, cremations are not known for their humor.
Well.
All right, go ahead.
There's something for everybody. So years ago, I was a little kid. Yes. Living with my parents, like you often do.
I mean, decades ago.
My mom got the mail one day, and she opened the mail, and for some reason, she took it out on the front porch or on the deck. It must have been summer. And she was out opening the mail and probably honestly trying to get away from us kids. I don't blame her. We're obnoxious. Mm-hmm. And so she's out opening the mail. She's either drinking coffee or maybe drinking a small glass of beer, depending on how her day's going. She's opening the mail, opening the mail. She gets to a card, like it's got a handwritten address, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it had a return address. I don't think she knew who it was from, so she opened it. And, you know, she pulls it out of the thing and da, da, da. She opens it and a bunch of stuff comes flying out. And she's like, huh. Like, and she starts reading the card and it was from, I'm going to screw up the name. It was one of my great aunts. I'm going to say great aunt Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out she had mailed my mother a portion of her husband's ashes without like saying, like, be careful when you open this. And so I would just say it was Uncle Frank. To this day, my mom's like, Uncle Frank is under the deck because he blew down.
Oh my. Oh my God.
And so my mom was like, I'm just glad he didn't go in my coffee because the wind was blowing. But she didn't know. She didn't know he was in there. It wasn't all of his ashes. It was just some of his ashes. And so then I believe she had to lie to great aunt Barbara. I think she sent them with the intention that my mom would take them out like to the farmland where he grew up. But again, they all blew out of the car because she didn't enclose them in anything. She didn't like ziplock them or something. And so my mom, I think, had to lie and say like, oh yes, I drove him out in the country. He's out there now. And really he's under the deck.
Okay, first of all, you're putting this on blast out there. Everybody in America is going to hear this.
Everybody in America. Yeah, everybody.
Second, I don't think my can of corn in a package mailed to Gail is the biggest USPS problem we've talked about today.
Well,
when transporting human remains, you have to tell someone.
Well, they're not liquid. They're not fragile. They're not really hazardous. They're not perishable.
So I don't know. They're perished.
Yeah, it's done. Like, there's not much more you can do to them. I mean, I'm sure someone can.
Oh, God.
Uncle Frank's under the deck.
Okay, and listen to our good friend Elizabeth. Please write in. Is this an appropriate way to handle cremated remains?
I'm going to answer that. No, it is not. Don't do that. If you're going to mail ashes to someone, you should, like, put them inside of something so they don't just come out of the envelope loose.
Now, the real question is the purple urn, did it get dented in the fall? Is it still usable?
Oh.
Or is there a scratch and dent sale? Because you know I love a bargain.
I love nothing more than a scratch and dent sale. Did you know there, I know a lady, actually we both know, I won't say her name just in case all of America is listening. When her mother died, her mom had a good sense of humor and liked a bargain. And so on the back of her headstone, they had engraved like 50% off, like they got it on sale.
Oh my God.
Like, that's great. I like that a lot.
I'm not okay with that, but you know, whatever.
I love a funny headstone. I like this. I think it was Leslie Nielsen from the the Naked Gun movies. I think his headstone says something like "Who farted?" or something. I just think because I was learning about this one day on Instagram. He had like a fart sound machine toy he carried around all the time, and like he would. So they put it on his headstone. That's funny. It's got some personality.
All right.
What would you put on your headstone?
We've talked about this because you said yours is going to say, "Here lies Mary. She really loves Doritos. Loved Doritos."
I'm going to get like one of those little like a Dorito carved into it.
Yeah. I don't know what's going to go on my headstone. I don't know.
I know what's going to go on my tombstone. It's going to be sausage.
Jesus Christ. Can we get right now, one of our other listeners out on the West Coast, Christopher, walking around in nature, right? It's dark. The sun's not up. And he's out here thinking, and here, this is podcast news. We're 10 minutes into this episode. We haven't talked a thing about Melrose Place. And he's thinking, how the fuck is this one going longer into the series than Melrose Sheltering in Place?
We talked about Melrose.
Did we already?
Yeah, well, we got fan mail from a Melrose fan.
Are we done? Did we do it?
What?
Did we do the episode? Are we done?
We can be.
No. Mary, I would like to tell you some examples of high art for the generations worthy of literary praise that I found.
Great. I didn't see this coming.
Okay. Well, the first artistic flair that I would like to draw attention to has to do with one Michael and Kimberly.
Oh.
You know, it's a classic. If you go back, right, from season one, it's a classic boy meets girl. Will they, won't they? They're fucking on a strawberry salad. He's wearing her deodorant, which by the way, of all the unbelievable things on Melrose Place, the idea that Michael Mancini, that chauvinist pig, would wear Speed Stick for ladies.
Lady Menon.
Yeah. No way was he going to wear Kimberly's deodorant. No way.
Lady Stick.
Yeah. That's how he got caught by Jane. Remember, he came out while he was getting dressed.
Do they still make Lady Sweet Stick?
How the fuck would I know? I'm not wearing that shit.
Do a little research. Oh, who's the show now?
It's well established. I am a male feminist, which when you really think about it is the best kind of feminist because it's not self-interested.
No, I would never accuse you of being self-interested.
Not about the feminism, at least.
Oh, my cats are running. What's going on?
Well, anyway, will they, won't they? Are they going to make it? Are they not? Oh, he killed her. Oh, she rose from the dead. And, you know, he tried to kill his new wife, but now she's going to kill them both. But then they're going to team up and kill him. But then he's going to come back and kill her. But then she's going to bomb the building. The classic American boy meets girl story.
Mm-hmm. With tale as old as time.
As old as time. It's like 50 Goes West or the one about the dinosaurs. The Land Before Time.
Fievel Goes West.
Don't you remember that show?
Oh, it was a movie. Starring a mouse named Fievel, who was a Russian immigrant. Because it was the 80s.
Russia. Mother Russia.
Oh, boy.
The best drag queen on Drag Race this season is Russian.
Really Russian or just pretending?
No, really Russian.
Really?
Yeah. She's in a hurry. Okay.
I hope not.
All right. Michael and Kimberly. So they're getting back together. I cannot fucking believe they wrote these two back together. I cannot believe it. These writers have no shame. They are shameless.
They don't care.
I can't believe they managed to make so that Kimberly, after she bombed the building, blowtorching Sydney's face, they managed to make it so Kimberly and Sydney were roommates, and then Sydney moved out to live with Michael, who then kicked her out, and now she's back living with Kimberly, and she kicked Kimberly out, so now Kimberly's going back to Michael. And here they are trying to decide what were the good old days. Was it pre-Jane or pre-accident? Michael wants her to move back in. She's hesitant. She says no. And Michael, what a manipulative motherfucker he is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's nothing new.
Okay. So Sydney kicks Kimberly out. So now we cut to the hospital and a real estate agent is looking for Kimberly. Kimberly's not immediately available. And the real estate agent says, well, she better find herself a new agent. This is not how real estate agents work.
Can I make a comment?
Better than anyone.
Thank you so much. I don't want to denigrate this lady's performance if she was a real actress, but was she like, and I say this, I'm not trying to be a jerk. Is this like some famous realtor that they got to come on from Los Angeles? Because like that was one of the most wooden sets of line readings in both of her little scenes. I'm like, is this an act? Is this a professional actor, or is this like just some lady whose picture was on a bench and they're like, hey, let's copy Berkman? Like,
sure. Do you know what they did? I can tell you this. I've researched this.
You've researched this.
They said to Andrew Hsu, hey, who do you got that's as good as you? Yeah, I don't know. But this real estate agent acts like, first of all, she went to the hospital to get Kimberly. Why? That's not what real estate agents do. Second, she said, well, she's not immediately available. She can find herself a new agent. Also not how real estate agents work. They will whore themselves up and down the highways and byways of this great country to get a commission.
You can't get rid of them. Bless their hearts.
No, you cannot.
The person who sold me my house 7 years ago still sends me things in the mail. Like,
yeah.
Like about other houses that are for sale, and I'm like, I'm not moving. I barely own this place.
Well, they don't know. And whatever. So this real estate agent goes to meet the agent at whatever apartment or house she was looking at, and the agent's like, sorry, someone got in front of you. And did the real estate agent say, but let me get you another deal, which is what every real estate agent would do? No.
Yes.
No. Yeah. And it turns out it was Michael who's keeping Kimberly homeless as a romantic allure.
This is very on brand for their relationship.
Listen. I don't mean to invade the world of the streets, but gentlemen, you may fascinate a woman with a slice of cheese, but do not take this approach from Michael Mancini. It works for him. Fine. He's got some magical dick. Like, there's something happening there. He does something to the ladies.
Mamma mia!
But do not think you can interfere with a woman's ability to have a home and that she will come to you.
God, no. I've never had anyone try to keep me homeless to go out with me. Maybe I'm doing it all wrong.
You know what? Try this on your little Bumble ad, right? Like, oh no, I'm homeless and I need a date right now.
Oh no, I'm homeless.
I'm here using the library's free public Wi-Fi.
My God. You know, speaking of libraries, we should all support our public libraries.
Oh, whatever. Okay, listen. Here's the art for the generations. Kimberly's yelling at Michael about what are you going to buy every house? Which, 4 episodes ago, Michael had money problems, but whatever. And he says, you know, essentially, and the quote is, whether you like it or not, we're inevitable. And so that's the art, Mary, of course, because in some situations, yeah, two people, they're star-crossed, forlorn lovers. Not sure if I use that word correctly. shut the fuck up. You need to be so quick using your English degree as a weapon.
Look, I don't get to do much with it.
What does forlorn mean?
Kind of like
I'm checking because I don't believe you. Pitifully sad and abandoned, unlikely to succeed or be fulfilled, hopeless.
All right.
Wretched, miserable, disconsolate, sorrowful, dejected. Yeah, forlorn, star-crossed. But they keep coming back to each other. And this struck me, Mary, this struck me as high art for the generations because it feels so true to my life. Because as you know, I'm a married gentleman. And the person I'm married to, like, we met back in the 1900s, in the 1000s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we, as you know, we went our separate ways. Mm-hmm. But the universe does, Mary, the universe, it gives and it takes, but it says, I'm in charge. And that's what the universe is saying to Michael and Kimberly. You two will be together. And I got to say, I haven't watched to the end of the series, but I think these two crazy cats, they just might make it.
I think only Michael Mancini makes it out alive of this whole series.
I will say, I did watch the reboot. Michael's in it and married. Kimberly is not there. So maybe they don't make it.
Who can say? You know,
I just did.
Well, it's awkward because I was going to talk about how trashy this is.
These two?
Yeah.
How?
I think the show summed it up nicely by It's just like the old days. I mean, the early days. So, okay, I won't retread all the territory here. So our first sight of these two is them waking up in bed together, because last week they did it at the end of that episode. He says it's just like the old days. She says, God, let's hope not, which is fair. He says, I mean, the early days. She says, oh, who could forget you, the two-timing sleazebag adulterer, and me, the wicked conniving homewrecker. And he's like, yeah. Because he doesn't understand. And he's like, oh, no, I mean, you know, post-Jane, pre-accident. And she says, yeah, two glorious weeks. And that made me laugh, because that's funny. He's like, we belong together. You ought to move back in. And she says, oh, that'll prove to the world that I really am crazy. He says, you wanted to live at the beach. This house is your home. And she says, we had sex. We don't have a relationship. She's not ready for that kind of commitment. She says, let's stop trying to ruin a good thing. This is only slightly related. So there's a scene where Kimberly shows up back at Melrose Place, because as I have forgotten, she lives there and is sharing her apartment with Sydney, which is a detail. Sydney comes out of the apartment dressed for a funeral, and she has thrown a lot of Kimberly stuff.
I did like Kimberly was like, what? Who died?
Okay, so Sydney has thrown a bunch of Kimberly stuff out on the balcony because she's tired of tripping over all of it. She's mad because Kimberly has, quote, taken my old apartment. Now you took my old bed in my old room at my old beach house. Mm-hmm. Kimberly's like, well, it was mine first. She says Sydney's being childish. Sydney says, maybe it just seems that way because you're so old. Okay. Kimberly keeps doing the I really care about you, but she kind of laughs. It's a weird line delivery. She knows that their relationship is unsettled. Sydney is outraged. Stuff a socking at you, quack. She said, you two-timed me worse than Michael ever did as a doctor and as a roommate, which is very funny to me because they've lived together for 5 minutes. She wants her to, she's got to go. She's got a funeral to go to. And as you said, Kimberly asks who died, which is, wow. Sydney has Adele Brooke drowned in the pool. And if she had been there, maybe she could have saved her if she wasn't whoring around with Michael. It was a weird scene. Later at the hospital, again, this realtor shows up to see Kimberly, and she's bothering the nurse at the station, who's like, I'm not a secretary. Then later, as you said, Kimberly comes running up to this house that's being shown, and there's that weird realtor again, who I really am wondering if this an actual famous local realtor that they put on TV, because she was her line readings were a little stiff. Okay, so Michael comes up. Michael has, I was unclear, did he buy this place or lease it? It's unclear to me. So are they going to live there now? Also, was this that house? Remember, to me, it looked like that place that Keith stayed at back in the day. I think it was that same place because it kind of had that same like ramp down the side.
It's but possible. Maybe- I think it might. I think, though, it might have been this is where Jake's garage was.
Jake's Jiffy Garage. Yes, but it may have come from that same place. He points out that they already did all the bad stuff in the relationship, so now there's only the good stuff left.
Oh, Michael Mancini, sister. No, that's not how this works.
Yeah, there's always more bad. He leaves her to think, and he walks off the beach, and then she sure as shit goes running after him. Like, I just... Look, am I delighted by this? Sure. Like, it's entertaining. These two are fun together.
This is wrong. Sydney and Michael. That is the way.
But we're not going to get that because this is a crazy soap opera where they're going to keep doing this over and over again. I like that at least it's having a sense of humor about it, and they're pointing out, like, it's like last time. Oh, wait, not that time. The one before that. Like, I appreciate that small amount of self-awareness, but this is very, like, it's very soap opera.
I might be willing to concede that.
Oh, wow.
Point. I think I had a bit of an artistic moment tucked in, but I think I do have to acknowledge that what it was tucked into might have been trash. Might have been trashy.
Okay. All
right. You can tell I'm feeling the after effects of having just had an episode with Gail. You know, I'm so much more magnanimous after meeting with her.
Yeah, I know. You really learned to take it on the chin with Gail.
Gosh, if she listened to these episodes, I would say so many nasty things right now. But she doesn't, so it would all be for nothing.
Yeah.
All right, well, can I take another shot at this? I'd like to talk about Bobby Parisi.
Go for it.
That is a phrase nobody has ever fucking said in their life. I'd like to talk about Bobby Parisi. Jesus Christ. When are they going to get these goddamn Parisis out of here?
Enough of these Parisis already.
Do you know how many Parisis is the correct number of Parisis?
No.
Zero. Zero is the answer. Do you know what's the best type of Parisi?
What?
A Parisi that's over in Iraq, fighting for our country.
He was a hero.
Or a dead Parisi. I just didn't want to say it. But listen, I found a way. I found a way to get it out.
You know what? I can always kind of, you know, find a way to get it out.
All right. Now, listen. Is Bobby Parisi entertaining? No. Is he a realistic character? Absolutely not. Does he have any redeeming qualities? No. Is he at least entertaining? Also, no. But he did bring us some artistic brilliance talking about some good advice I learned in the late 1900s, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I read a book. I think I still have it, actually. But it was written by a comedian about what it's like being gay in the 90s. Okay?
Okay.
And here was the advice. It was a comedian. There were cartoons drawn. I forget exactly. But what I remember was, listen, if you meet someone and on the first date or whatever, they're telling you all about their whole run of evil, selfish, greedy, self-centered exes that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
Just be wary that you're the next one in that story.
Oh, sure. Right?
Yeah. So I've held on to that. Like, that's really good advice. And let me tell you, does it check out? Every single time. Every single time. That's good advice. The lady, she doth not lie. She doth protest the right amount.
Well, that's great.
Well, Bobby Parisi channeled that advice. And listen, he may have read that book. I bet the writers of Melrose Place were reading that Glad to Be Gay book or whatever I had.
I'm sure they were.
Because he said, Bobby Parisi said to Amanda Woodward, if you're this good at manipulating people, how do I not know, or how do I know you're not doing the same thing with me? And I was like, oh, wow, he's got it. He's got it. Because if his little girlfriend, I'm sorry, that was not feminist of me. If his little lady friend was manipulating everybody else, of course you should assume she's manipulating you too. I mean, within weeks of dating, she was like, we're changing your whole appearance because you can't have a mullet.
I mean, she wasn't wrong about that.
She was not wrong. Although that, I just want to remind the writers, this cable company was a fake company. Right? Remember that was a fake company Jack made up to get in closer to Amanda?
It did seem that way. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
It was a fake cable company that he made so that Brooke would let him hire D&D advertising. So,
well,
anyway.
It's just like Pinocchio. It became a real cable company.
Bobby Parisi, hire for the generations because, listen, if someone's good at manipulating people, you should presume you're being manipulated. But can I tell you about the rest of the storyline, or are you going to be talking about this?
No, I'm not talking about any of that.
I thought you might not be. That's why I asked. You notice I didn't check on Michael and Kimberly because I assume you're always good for a Michael and Kimberly review.
Well, it's such a rich vein, you know?
Yeah. You know, I mean, at least the one's not already destroyed by Michael's drunk driving.
Done.
Okay. Well, anyway, Peter's on a date with Alicia. Alicia says, beware of quiet men because Peter's, you know, somewhere else. Peter's clearly still trying to get back with Amanda. This is the longest con ever. Like, calm down, but whatever. Alicia comes by. Peter's alone in the office. And she finds that out, locks the door, and they have office sex. Great. Alicia says she resigned, and Peter clearly is getting visibly nervous, like giving up the game. Like, hey, Peter, you're not playing it cool.
He kept repeating, like, wait, you got rid of your job? You mean your job? You quit your job?
Yeah. Anyway, she said, Bobby didn't accept my resignation, so now I'm in control. And then Alicia said, and by the way, this was almost the other, also a high art point. Take a note, doctor. Never, ever argue with a lawyer. Mm. Yeah. Good advice. Yeah. I do have to say, a good thing that they, like, you know, we've talked about how the writers are really good at the small character beats, keeping them consistent, but not the big ones. The small one of these two having to, like, which profession is better. I like it. They've got that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, they continued. Amanda asks Bobby to go on a double date with Peter and Alicia to try and, because Alicia was mean to Amanda. I didn't understand. But Peter tells Amanda he's head over heels in love with Alicia. And then Amanda gets jealous.
The green-eyed monster.
Yep. And then Alicia is sleeping in bed after having great sex with Peter. We assume it's great. Peter's poking around through Alicia's files at night and she caught him, but pretended to be asleep. So we can assume this storyline is going to continue. And again, not be very fun.
So what's the higher of the generations part?
Oh, if you're, this was, I mean, that was just reviewing the storyline, but the higher for the generations, if you're good at manipulating people, you're probably manipulating. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Don't assume she's using her wiles only against or only on other people.
You know who could use that advice?
Who?
The players of the game show Traitors.
I don't know that show.
You should watch it sometime.
I'm sorry. I've been busy with Risa Tisa.
I guess that actually is probably many more hours than Traitors. Traitors is about an hour long. There's about 10 episodes a season. There's been two. We're in the middle of the second. No, we're finishing the second season.
Okay.
So it's about 20 hours. How many hours did you spend on Riki Tiki Tavi or whatever it's called?
Wow. Risa Tisa. And I mean, the series was about 9.5 hours. And then there were follow-up. And then you had to get to know Risa Tisa. And then you had to research, like, who was this ex-husband? And what about the other wives? Oh, there are multiple wives. Who are these other people? What are people saying? How much money has she made from these TikToks? You know, all of that. So I would say probably about 20 hours. Plus gossiping with my gay nephew.
Well, that's like another 12 hours today.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's just on family.
And your sister who didn't get you a present for her birthday.
It's her birthday. Yeah. We talked about this off mic. It is my sister's birthday and she did not call me. She did not get me anything. It's like she doesn't want to celebrate.
She doesn't know how to live.
She does not. You're right. You got it. She doesn't know how to live. So, Mary, I think we need a break. Can we take a break?
Dear God, yeah.
Hello, listeners. I'm coming to you with some very important information of a new product that you might need more than you ever imagined.
Wow.
Have you ever wondered if your partner, and by partner, I don't mean fucking business partner. I hate when people say partner. When like, please just say girlfriend, boyfriend, or husband or wife. Please stop that. Whatever.
What about boy toy?
Are you unsure if your boy toy's new friend is just a friend or a potential threat to your relationship?
Always a threat.
Well, that's where you can enter the Lezometer.
Oh my God.
Our cutting edge service harnesses advanced technology to determine the true sexual orientation of the women in your life, even when they're just confused because they're going through a phase.
Oh my God.
This provides clarity when you need it the most. Mary, listen, imagine you walk in, you see your little lover boy making out with a woman.
Ugh, I won't put up with it.
Or will you? What if the woman is a lesbian and then it all checks out?
I mean, but okay.
But how can she prove she's a lesbian?
Okay.
That's what Lezometer does, Mary. Listen, there's all sorts of new technology to determine the true lesbianicness of a woman.
Wow.
But not a Lezometer. Here, you can forget facial recognition, you know, the bone structure,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or iris analysis, not reliable enough for us.
Okay.
You can even forget, you know, checking out the length of the fingernails, which I will say, a reliable metric, but not foolproof. Not foolproof. No. Our secret weapon at Lesometer to determine the true sexual orientation of the woman making out with your boy toy is, you're never going to guess this, Mary.
Oh boy, I bet I won't.
Barb. Our secret weapon is Barb, the ultimate lesbian guru.
Barb?
Barb. She's got, Mary, you might be suspicious, but she has decades of experience at this game.
Wow.
And she has a keen eye for the telltale signs of lesbianicness.
Oh, what are those?
She can't tell you, Mary. She just knows it when she sees it. And now you might be thinking, is this just Gaydar? Oh, no. That's not Barb. That's what those fucking twinks are doing.
Mm, yes.
Barb reviews each case personally. You're going to bring her into the room while this potential lesbian is making out with your boy toy.
Okay.
And she will draw on her wealth of knowledge to deliver the most accurate results, sometimes even surprising the woman in question.
Oh, no.
Let me hit you with a real life scenario. Picture this. There's a young gay man. Let's call him Alex.
Okay.
Okay. Finds himself in a nightclub, swept away by a captivating stranger with an eye patch.
Ooh.
Yeah. After a night of passionate kissing. Alex, no, it's only kissing, Mary. No, it was only kissing. You have to hear the rest of the story. Okay. The rest could not have happened. It was only kissing. God, Alex is not a hooker. Alex is not a slut.
Okay.
Let's have some respect for sweet Alex here, okay? Anyway, Alex discovers that the object of his affection, the stunning twink he's been making out with all night, is actually a butch lesbian who thought he was a butch lesbian.
Oh my God.
See, with the Lesometer, if Barb was around, Alex could have avoided this awkward situation altogether, saving himself from a night of confusion and mistaken identity, and to be frank, giving up his gold star.
That's the real crime here.
Yeah. Do you know we're not supposed to use the term gold star gay anymore?
I mean, you know, I can see why.
What? I disagree. I'd keep in mind. Anyway, here are some other examples. Okay, these are use cases. These are people who've actually called up Lesometer by dialing 1-800-LESOMETER, but it's L-E-Z-O-M-E-T-R. There's no E at the end. That goes to something else. That goes to Lesomete, not what you want. Okay?
Very different.
Yeah, Lesometer. L-E-Z-O-M-E-T-R.
Okay.
Anyway, there's an office situation. Sarah suspects that her coworker, Emily, might be harboring romantic feelings for her. But what do you do? Do you pursue? Do you take her up on it? Do you say, is anyone else in this office? No, and lock the door? No. That will get you fired if Emily is not actually a lesbian. That's where Barb comes in. With the Lesometer's confirmation that Emily actually was heterosexual just with short hair, no coming for me, lesbians, just with short hair, Sarah can breathe a sigh of relief and focus on maintaining a professional relationship and not trying to seduce Emily in the office.
Oh, what a time saver.
Oh, God. You know that Barb, she's so good at this too. Can I tell you about the times Barb was wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. There are none.
Oh, I get what you did there.
Yeah. Okay. Now imagine a new neighbor situation. Lisa moves into the apartment next door and Rachel wonders if she might be a potential love interest.
Oh.
After a quick Lesometer scan, and really this one took Barb just minutes, and revealed Lisa's lesbian status as 100%. Rachel can now approach the budding friendship with confidence, knowing they're on the same page. And if they're going to be friends, they might as well just move in together right away. It saves money.
It is cost effective.
It's just more frugal. You know, why do you need two litter boxes?
Well, it depends how many cats you have.
Do you really need more than one litter box when you have more than one cat?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Okay, now, Michelle, a bisexual woman, somehow momentarily stumps the Lesometer. See, this is where fucking Gen Z is ruining everything.
Jesus Christ.
Because for the first time, Mary, the results came back as inconclusive. Oh, Barb couldn't figure it out.
You can't go stumping Barb.
Now, you might say, as my niece says, bisexuals exist, Uncle Teach. Yeah, whatever. No, they don't. But as it turns out, Michelle identifies as pansexual.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a label Barb's not familiar with. It didn't apply in her generation. So,
with all due, I assume with a name like Barb, we're dealing with an
Correct. Barb, she's got the decades of experience here. So Barb just went ahead and said, yeah, we're going to call her Les.
We're just going to put everybody under that umbrella. It's fine. Close.
So, let me just tell you a little bit about Barb. You know, Barb's story is one of resilience and courage and unwavering determination to find lesbians everywhere.
Wow.
She was born into a conservative family in a small town in America. I won't say which. And she always knew she was different, that she had a gift. Now, as a teenager, she struggled to come to terms with her own sexuality. She felt like an outsider in her own community, Mary.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but after high school, Barb moved to the big city, hoping to find acceptance and freedom, but all she found was bitchy lesbians, the lipstick type.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, let me tell you, life wasn't easy for a young lesbian in the 80s. Barb, that tells you how old she was. Barb worked odd jobs to make ends meet, often turning to the seedy underbelly of the city for employment opportunities.
Oh, geez.
Uh-huh. You know what I mean here.
Like Arby's?
She was selling flowers on the street corner.
She should sell donuts instead. People like on the street corner.
Now, yeah, but you had to make them, you know? Anyway, there were times when Barb hit rock bottom, when she found herself down on her luck and desperate to find her way out. But through it all, Mary, she never lost sight of who she was and what she wanted, and that was finding more lesbians. And when she discovered her Lesometer power, it was a lifeline. It was a chance for her to help others avoid the same pitfalls and mistakes she had made along the way.
Wow.
Barb's journey to becoming the leading expert on Lesometer at Lesometer is a testament to the power of resilience, hormones, and the importance of staying true to yourself no matter the odds. So Mary, with Barb's guidance, you can trust that your Lesometer results are in good hands, unless we're talking about pansexuals.
You know, it's an emerging field, and it makes sense that it would take some time.
I gotta tell you, I still remember the day I had to Google pansexual. I was not amused. I was like, that's just bisexual.
You know, give the people what they want.
Well, let me tell you what Barb wants. She wants to know, she wants to know who out there is a lady that's single and ready to mingle your household toiletries because you're moving in.
Oh my God. Wow, where can I learn more about this amazing service?
You gotta call. I'm sorry, she does not have a website. She doesn't do that. So you're gonna call 1-800-LESOMETER, LEZOMETR.
Okay, that's easy mm-hmm. enough.
Yeah, and we'll hook you up.
All right, is it like a hotline that's available 24/7, or like should I wait for business hours?
Is it funny that you should ask? So Barb, she's the type of lesbian. She's available from 7 to 3.
Look, nice work if you can get it, right?
A Pacific Standard Time.
Pacific Standard, not Pacific mm-hmm. non-standard.
I don't need this, Mary.
Seems like maybe you do. Well, this
Lesometer, Barb is here for you.
I'm so glad to learn of this service, and I look forward to sharing the good news with somebody I know, maybe.
Listen, if there's someone in your life that wants to know if they or someone else is a lesbian, Barb will crack the case.
Barb's on it.
Hello, and welcome back to the second half of season 4, episode 21 of the Melrose Place cast. We are discussing Devil in a Wet Dress because Brooke is the devil. She's haunting. She's a hauntingly devil and she's in a wet dress. I forget why it's wet. I think it was the style. I'm Tiege.
I'm still Mary.
And listen, before we get into it, Mary, we should just revisit a thing from the beginning. Elizabeth is going to be a guest in 4 episodes. Well, I mean, not 4 weeks, but 4 episodes. Listen, that's how easy it is to get on as a guest on this show. You just have to email us one time and not about Kelly Kapowski, and you're invited in.
I mean, honestly, even if it were about Kelly Kapowski, if you're interested in being a guest, reach out.
All right, Mary, why don't you get us started?
I just want to say, long live the ghost of Brooke.
Oh, ghost Brooke.
Ghost Brooke. So the episode opens with Billy, Allison, Jake, and Jane walking out to Jane's car to go out to the movies. Allison hesitates because, as we recall from last week, Brooke accosted them by the pool, yelling and blah, blah, blah. She doesn't want to leave Brooke when she's in that kind of state. Jake tells her to stay out of it. Allison says we should go back, and Billy says, I think we should go to the movies. And Jake says, he may not be showing it like that crazy broad back there, but Billy really needs you. And I'm like, oh, okay, Mr. In touch with his feelings enough to understand how others feel, Jake. Oh, okay. Is this like, is he sensitive because all of a sudden he stole Matt's haircut? Like, how did this anyway? Allison's like, save me a seat, and she runs back inside. So we cut to inside. She spots Brooke in the pool. She jumps in to start fishing her out. She's yelling, help, help. Billy is somehow instantly there. He couldn't have heard her.
No, because he decided to go back. He decided Allison was right.
No, he didn't.
Well, I don't know how else you explain it. It's not like he was hanging out in the garage.
I would call it a plot hole.
By the way, Christopher proved us wrong about that garage.
I'm still a little fishy.
For folks who don't know, Christopher sent us on Instagram a message, video.
Know that. To be clear, no one would know that. For folks who don't know.
Where he has video evidence of who was talking about the garage?
Wasn't it Michael telling someone to put something in the garage? I don't know.
Yes. So Christopher said the garage has been canon since season 1, which is awkward because we were on record as saying we're the experts since we knew that Matt had multiple degrees.
I still think that this garage situation is kind of like the second floor apartments.
Yeah. Okay. Continue. I'm sorry.
Anyway, they fish her out. She's not breathing.
Fish her out.
Well... Billy tries to do mouth-to-mouth, and he finally puts that slack jaw of his to use. After the credits, we cut to some B-roll of an ambulance with lights and sirens, and there's this weird soundtrack of, like, Imitation Goo Goo Dolls playing, and it's not a sad song. It's like, boop-a-doo, hanging up a doo boop-a-doo, like, 90s, like, this is, the vibe doesn't match. It doesn't make sense. We cut to, like, outside on the street, there are cops, there's a crowd of extras watching. Back inside, we get an overhead shot that slowly comes down over Brooke on a gurney. And for a second there, I thought she was going to open her eyes, but then they toss a sheet over her face and said she. But they had me for a second. I'm like, I don't know, maybe. All right. So Billy is asleep later and he wakes up because the wind is howling and he hears, I'm cold, Billy. And he gets up and he goes out in the living room and the front door is wide open and there's like leaves blowing in and we hear Brooke, what sounds like Brooke saying, Billy, I'm cold. And he looks out and the wind's whipping around out on the patio and he looks down at the ground and there are wet footprints leading to the door. Dun, dun, dun. He slams the door, he pulls the window shut and then he stands there. He looks like he's got like his hands clasped and he looks like Ebenezer Scrooge looking out the window. Like it's the weirdest facial expression I've ever seen him make. It's very odd. And he's like clasping his hands and that's kind of how it is. And Brooke's ghost or whatever is like chuckling. So next time this happens, this is like the next day, he's getting ready for the big Lindy toy pitch. And he's out on the patio where has there always been a table with an umbrella? I don't remember that, but maybe.
I noted this because there was no way this furniture was here.
Because we've spent so much time looking at like Humpster Dumpster and the garbage cans. Mm-hmm. you would have noticed this, but he's drinking a beer. The wind blows his papers to the ground, so he gets down to pick them up, and a veil of fog rolls mysteriously over the pool like it's covered in lily pads. His eyes get big. He cut back to the water, where we see a shadow rising from beneath the surface, and lo and behold, the head of Brooke pops out, and he gasps. And she stands up in the pool, and she's wearing her pajamas, and for a second, I thought she was in like some weird rubber suit, because it looked kind of weird, and she tells him hello. And she's still got the
ball. She does not say, hello.
Hello. He's like, this isn't happening. And there's like full on echo effect now on the sound. And she's like, did you miss me? Me. Nice job at my funeral. What happened? And she's like, couldn't you admit that it's your fault that I'm dead? Brooke is not pulling any punches now that she's dead. Mm-hmm. He's like, this isn't happening. And she goes, oh, yes, it is. And it's your fault. I came to you with so much love and you gave me nothing but hate. And he turns away and she's like, too bad Allison won't stay with you. I guess she knows you're a heartless, unfeeling bastard. I'm liking Brooke more and more. She laughs and he's running toward his apartment to get away. And she's like, you can't run away from me. I'll never leave you. You.
You're being a little dramatic, Mary.
Well, I think it's merited. He turns and he tells her, like, stop it. And she's like, I'll never leave you alone. And he says, stop it. Get out of my life, Brooke. And she's like, haha. And she smiles and stares at him. And so we cut back to reality. And we look up and Allison's on the balcony watching this. And she's like, Billy? And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. And he goes inside.
Everything's fine. Nothing to worry about. We're fine.
It's fine. Cut to Billy. They've been wondering where Brooke's stuff was, and so the show for once made a callback to the hotel where they were holding Brooke's things hostage because she hadn't paid her bill. So he goes to pick up her things and he finds her Lindy toy research conveniently sitting at the top of the box, and she's written some slogan options, which I would like to read to you now.
Okay, I can't wait.
So one is, stop playing games, start living them, and that one's circled in red, so that must be the one she liked. There are some other options. Can I play with your Lindy? For a good time, buy a Lindy. Lindy is for players. Billy looks contemplative, or at least I think that's what his face was trying to do. And later he's at the pitch and kind of going down the toilet. And at the last minute, he very flatly, in only that way that Billy can read a line, says, when you're ready to stop playing games and start living them. And of course, the client loves it. So great. That night, Billy's asleep on the couch, and there's water dripping on his face. Dun, dun, dun. He wakes up, and Ghost Brooke is leaning over him, trouble sleeping. And he jolts off the couch, and she's like, well, you'd better get used to it. He tells her to leave him alone. And then she poofs, and he turns around, and she's in front of him on the other side of the room, holding their wedding picture. And she goes, why couldn't you see how beautiful we were? Did you hate me then? Did you hate me on our wedding day? And he's like, I didn't hate you. I just stopped caring, which is also not great to say to a ghost you're trying to make happy. She says it's because Allison stole him away. He asked, what do you want? And she's like, I don't want anything. I don't need your love anymore. Do you know why? Because you sold your soul. And all it cost was one little line. That silly little Lindy toy slogan is going to make you a star. And from now on, every step you take, every bridge you burn will be because of me. She leans in to kiss him, and he wakes up, and he looks bewildered and confused, or in other words, kind of like he normally looks, and he picks up the wedding
picture. That was beneath you, Mary.
I don't know if it was. He picks up the wedding picture and yells, get out of my life, and throws it against the wall. Get out of my life. What is happening to me? This is magnificent. I would watch a whole episode of just Brooke scaring Billy and making him unhappy. Like, she was a pain in the ass. Living Brooke was a pain in the ass, but this is great. Like, I would watch this all day. Put her in the pool some more, have the fog machine rolled out, let her go, like, blow the umbrella off the table, whatever she wants. Just keep bringing her back.
Yes. I agree. I wish the hauntings of Brooke were more weighty and lasted longer, but they do not. They do not. This is it. She's gone. We'll never see her again.
I'm not going to believe that yet.
Well, you think I'm lying?
No, I just think, you know, maybe your research wasn't exhaustive.
It's IMDb.
They're not always right.
Well, whatever.
Crazy things on there.
Yeah, The Haunting, the rising out of the mist. Well, a cool thing to have done with the pool. I have to give them credit. They're making good use of the pool.
Finally.
Uh-huh. But otherwise, yeah, I can't disagree with your statement.
You know what? I wonder if the lady who played, what's her name? The designer who got killed in the explosion / heart attack. I wonder
if Mackenzie Hart.
Thank you. I forgot.
Say her name.
I wonder if she's jealous that she didn't get to come back as a ghost and come out of the pool. She also died like in the pool, right? She didn't get blown in the pool, did she?
No, she was up on the balcony looking for that whore, Jane.
Kimberly was in the pool. That's right.
Kimberly was in the pool. Yeah, Peter dove into the pool to save Kimberly. Uh-huh. Well, Mary, I found one third example of high art for the generations.
Oh my God, way to go.
And Mary, it's homosexual in nature.
No.
Oh, yeah. I got Matt and Alan on my bingo card.
What a card that is.
All right, so here's what had happened to set up the quote. First, Matt shows up to the set. Alan is a soap opera star, and you're correct. He is now in league with Sandy. There was an opportunity to bring Sandy back, and they failed. They let us down.
I think they should have done that or brought Sandy back as a ghost out of the pool, too.
I think they should. Yeah, have the lily pads rising with her.
Oh my God, like she was strangled by the lily pads and like they're all like hung all over. Like,
yeah, like get these lily pads off of me. They're not native to Los Angeles. they're an invasive species.
That would be a great name for the episode.
Yeah, but Melrose Place, they would go with something a little more appropriate, like choked by lily pads.
I think if they were clever, they would call it invasive she-spees, because like she's a I think I can work on this show if it gets rebooted.
All right. When it gets rebooted. All right, listen. Matt's on set, and the executive director of Restless Hearts tells Matt that Alan can't be gay. And Matt's like, well, let me tell you what he can do then. Anyway, she says to him, I know it's exciting dating an actor, but I'd really like it to have fewer visits to the set. And I was like, damn. So they're going a little bit of back and forth. And then the boss says, and this is the high art for the generations worthy of literary praise, let's not make nooners a habit.
That was funny. I did write that one down.
And why is that high art for the generations? Just because it made me laugh. It was such a good, the phrase, you know what? This is it. The phrase nooners, who says that outside of the 1990s?
No, I don't think people say nooners anymore, do they?
I don't think so. You know why? Because these motherfucking corporations got us working too hard.
We're working for the man instead of having nooners. Would it be inappropriate? Oh my God. Wouldn't it be fun to like bring it back? But like, just use it to describe lunch to confuse people of a certain age. Like, vote for my nooner and come back with a sandwich and be like, we both work from home, so we need someone who doesn't work from home to start that. Please, someone else. Try to make nooners just mean lunch, please. I beg of you. Let me know how it goes.
Oh God, Mary, you're gonna get us sued. To be clear, this is not a professional work advice podcast. This is a parody podcast.
I don't think anyone's here for professional advice. I hope not. Listen,
I hope not either, but we will find out the hard way when we get hit with that lawsuit.
Dude, for that?
Oh, you don't think so? If someone says Per the advice from Mary What's-Her-Face from one of the Melrose Place podcasts, the sixth most popular one, I'm taking my neuter.
Yeah, but they're not doing anything inappropriate. They're going to get lunch. So I don't know that you can get in trouble for saying that if you're just like going to get a sandwich and standing there eating it.
I'm telling you, they will find a way. Okay, listen. Let's not make nooners a habit. Hysterical. Capture the times because no one says nooners anymore. Nobody says nooners anymore. But okay, it continues because Matt walks in on Alan making out with his female co-star in the apartment.
Yeah.
And he says, I hope I'm interrupting. And they make it okay just by raising their script at him. That's all they did.
Yeah.
That's not a convincing argument.
Well, it doesn't have to be.
Anyway, it turns out she is allegedly a lesbian.
How dare you impugn Valerie?
I didn't even know her name.
Did you know Valerie was played by Jeri Ryan? I was like, oh my God, it's Jeri Ryan.
Holy shit. She was the ex-wife of the guy that ran for Senate against Barack Obama.
Yes, and she was also on Star Trek and played Seven of Nine.
Seven of Nine, yes. And there was some, they went to sex clubs together.
Yeah.
See, she's not a lesbian. They don't go to sex clubs.
Nooners. Can I give her a compliment?
The Valerie or the
Jeri Ryan.
Jeri Ryan, yes. Go ahead.
I don't want to speak badly of the guy who plays Alan, okay? Because like he's doing a fine job. But like she's a really good actress. Like as soon as she started talking, I'm like, she's really good at this. She might be too good for this.
She probably was. But remember, yeah. She's an actress whose role is being a national actress. So, like, she better be good. Like, she's meta.
Yeah. But a lot of the people, again, I'd like to point out in this very episode, the person and or actual realtor playing the realtor. Like, with all due respect, not a good actor. So, like, when a good actor shows up in here, I'm like, oh, let me take note.
Hmm.
And what's her name? Katie, who plays Alicia, too. She's really good. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry I don't remember her name. I know it, but it's not coming to me. But she's a really good actress.
She's good. I will agree.
All right.
Well, that's what I got. Let's not make Nooners a habit. I will also say, Nooners would lose their allure if they were scheduled, if it was like a scheduled situation, right? If it was a habit.
It wouldn't be as much fun if it wasn't at noon, too, because nooner is just fun to say. Like, oneer isn't as much fun.
Yeah.
11.
Yeah, no, you can't do it. Can't do it that way.
A nooner. Nooner or nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These episodes, do we give our episodes title when we post them? I don't remember.
No, we use the title from... Glad you're a listener. We use the title of the show. So this one will be 4.21- A Devil in a Wet Dress.
Could we put in parentheses nooners or nothing?
We could. We won't.
Like some of our listeners. That's all.
We
I'm
won't.
Saying.
We won't. I suppose anyone going to their favorite podcasting app and searching for nooner.
People of a certain age loading up their podcast app or calling someone they barely know on FaceTime thinking that they're making a regular phone call. Which is a callback to a conversation before we recorded. I'm sorry. Nooners are nothing.
Nooners are nothing. All right, Mary.
I need to write an ad.
I was just gonna say, is this gonna be our sponsor? Nooners are nothing.
God, it should have been. Well, maybe I'll still have enough time. I did want one more thing about this little scene, and then I'll move on. I did like when so Matt sees them filming on the set, and they're doing a love scene. He's like, "Wow, it must be really hard being romantic with someone you barely know." And she says, "Are you kidding? I look forward to the Stevie sex scenes. Fewer lines to memorize," which I thought was very funny. And then, you know what? I liked her reveal that she was a lesbian. I didn't see that coming. Maybe I was naive.
Do you believe it? Do you believe it? I mean, because women usually get confused.
They all have a face, right? No, I believed her because she's a good actress. So she convinced me.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. Time will tell. I got to tell you, I don't trust this closet case. I don't know if I've taken that position on anything else, but I don't trust them.
Yeah. You're well established that you're anti-nooner. And... All right. Well, I got news for you.
Okay.
Incredible new fabrics came out of the Orient this year. You're welcome.
Go on.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Allison's and Jane's / Jake's Jiffy J. Rush And she's talking about how Billy won't let her help plan the funeral. This funeral was planned in seemingly like 12 hours. Like, I'm not that it was like a much of a funeral, with all due respect, but like, normally it's a couple days, but it seems like it was like the day after she died practically. But okay. She's talking about that, and then Jane reminds her that Brooke hated them all, so why does she care? Fair enough. They chit-chat about that some more. Jane's like, I'm sorry, I've got my first solo pitch tomorrow, and my dress is a mess. Can I practice my pitch on you? And Allison's like, yeah. And so Jane starts, as you know, incredible new fabrics came out of the Orient this year. I'm like, oh God, it's the 90s, and people like Jane and my mom say the Orient. Oh God.
Do you know what they called people from that area?
Yeah.
Let's not say it, but not good. Not good.
Not great. Allison asks her, where are they, about the fabrics? And she's like, the fabrics. Most clients get a kick out of show and tell. And Jane's like, oh, I'm wrong already. Richard handled the pitch. My job was to sit in the back of the room and look complex and artsy. Allison's like, I don't want to interfere. And Jane's like, no, help me. Can you come with me to the presentation tomorrow? Allison's like, no, the buyer wants to hear from you. And won't they wonder who I am? And Jane says, I'll call you the director of marketing. So, all right, she goes with her. After the pitch, later that night, Jane and Jake go out to dinner and they meet Allison in the courtyard. She thanks Allison for helping her at the presentation. Jake's like, Allison seems like a good friend to have. And Jane's like, I trust her, and I can't say that about anyone else these days. So I assume that's some kind of foreshadowing, because what else would have been there? There's smooch, and she invites him in, and Richard comes walking in, and he scoffs. He's like, oh. And she's like, go upstairs. I'm sure Joe's waiting for you. And he's like, oh, I was worried you still had your hopes up about the Jordan deal. He's like, I heard you had a great pitch. And she's like, how do you know? He says, I went right after you. And he said, Jordan really liked my work. And she says, you might have had a good dog in Pontiac, but I got the order. And he doesn't believe her. And Jake's like, oh no, buddy boy, it's true. I was there when he called. Jake says, talent always wins over trash. And they go inside.
Oh.
Richard glares. Inside the apartment, Jane gloats that she got to see his face when he found out, and she and Jake are gonna go do it. Later, they're canoodling, and he's gotta leave and go back to work at Shooters. Her phone rings, and she's like, what? What do you mean? We had a deal. And she hangs up, and she's lost the deal, and she's yelling, Richard! And she's wrapped in a bed sheet, stomping through the courtyard and up the stairs. She's like, get your client-stealing butt out here now. Richard comes out, and he's like, well, 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 modeling your new sleepwear line, which did make me laugh. She calls him a cheating bastard. He destroyed her account. And he's like, I just told the guy the truth. You work out of a garage, you don't have any equipment, and your only employee is an imaginary lady named Allison. Joe's like, Richard. And he's like, I can make the same designs at half the cost in half the time. They deserve to know that, and I deserve the business. And Jane lunges at him, but Jake stops her. And he's like, oh, Richard, so is this what rock bottom looks like to you? Backstabbing and client stealing? Joe's like, let's all just calm down. And Jane's like, I don't have time. And you're a photographer. You don't know what's going on. Richard says, you don't know the design business either, Jane. He goes back inside, and Joe's like, that's a rotten way to run the company. And he's like, winning friends is not the game plan. I beat Jane to the punch. Given the chance, she'd do the exact same thing to me. We both know it. I forgot how much I hate when they start having like design business shit on the show, because it's just boring, and they make it sound like it's this super, it's like, who cares? Nobody cares. I didn't care. I don't care about this. Am I ever? Maybe I'm not supposed to care about it. I don't know. I don't care what happens to this. And I'm like, I'm really bored right now with like these two just swapping partners back and forth. Like, I'm sick that everybody here is going out with each other in various times. It's annoying.
It is. I would never criticize the writers of Melrose Place, as you know.
No, never.
But that said, this is just like, I've had enough.
I've had enough.
Enough already. So yeah, this one, it's just, you know what it is? Jane is boring. Joe has lost her, she's no longer interesting.
Yeah, she isn't doing much lately.
Yeah, so together, you throw in Richard and this design companies that nobody gives a fuck about. And then to spice it up, we're having Jake with his haircut. I'm sorry. I can't get behind this, Mary.
I don't like Jake's haircut only because I have now several times in this episode, like before I saw his face, I thought it was Matt. And vice versa, because their haircuts are too similar now. I don't like it. Put me on the
record. Listen, you are on the record.
Oh, thank God. Did you have anything else from this week?
Well, no. I did like, I almost quoted Jane saying, I know I'm a thrill, but could you go back up to your own life? That's really it. What about you?
My only other thing, I'd like to talk about Amanda at the first meeting at D&D after Brooke died.
Yes.
I believe this is the day after she died. Because the way they're talking is like, I'm surprised I saw you at work today. And Billy's like, we're getting divorced, so I'm at work. Like, that's fine. This is the day after Brooke has died. These are things that Amanda says in a work meeting. We lost a valued employee and friend. Regarding the funeral, those of you whose schedule permits.
That is American capitalism, by the way.
Boy, oh boy. No funerals and no nooners nowadays. Mm-hmm. Amanda tells Billy she wants him back on the Lindy toy account because Brooke really dropped the ball. Billy asks, should I mention what happened to Brooke? Amanda says, yes, maybe they would back off if they heard the tragic news from Brooke's widower.
Yeah. Oh, last, God.
Last but not least, Allison, after Billy leaves the room, protests this. And she's like, you know, that was like really cold. Like, I know they're getting divorced, but like, you know, they were still married. And like, you know. And Amanda says, if you need to mourn Brooke, take a personal day. If not, get back to work. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, holy shit. It reminds me of one of our former workplaces. Where the Kleenex is not for the staff.
Mary, what does that mean? The Kleenex is not for the staff?
You remember that story, don't you?
I've never heard it.
You've heard that story.
What are you talking about?
There were some things that went on in our former workplace that were upsetting and people were having emotional reactions. And I recently just told that story and had it verified by the person who told me that it really happened. And it's not just something we all made up to think it was funny.
Oh, no, I can confirm 100% it happened.
The person in charge of finances at that institution made it clear that the Kleenex at the organization was not for the staff. It was for the customers.
They wanted to stop buying the Kleenex for the counselor who said... Who said people are often very sad and crying, and the response was, well, staff probably use those Kleenex too.
Oh my God, that's so crazy. Anyway.
Unacceptable. Mary, I think, I hate to say it, I don't think we settled this debate yet.
I mean, we learned a lot about ourselves along the way though.
We did. It's about the friends you make along the way.
It is. It's about the friends and it's about the nooners.
Jesus. Okay. Okay. That was good. You got me. You got me.
I got you.
You got me, Mary.
Oh, God. This week's episode of the Melrose Placecast is generously supported by the following sponsor. Great news for all of you gamers out there. The number four game company in CD-ROMs and virtual reality headsets from 1995 is branching out into the adult game market. No, they don't mean pornography. Why does everyone keep asking if they mean pornography?
I was ready to buy.
That's right. Lindy Toys wants to sell you games you'll buy for your kids, but you won't be able to stop playing them yourself. Here are three hot titles coming to the gaming market this year.
Hot titles in adult gaming? I don't understand why people keep thinking this is porn.
Have you ever wanted to be a barista, but you can't stand the smell of coffee? Well, you're going to want to pick up a copy of Melrose Mocha Madness. You're going to play as Jake, a brand new coffee slinger working the morning rush at a popular Melrose coffee house. You'll virtually learn all the skills you need to earn enough tips to pay one quarter of your rent, like burying the nozzle, insinuating that all non-coffee drinks must be for children, and holding a smug look on your face when you find yourself with a little bit of tip money rattling around in that jar. You'll be thinking, for a good time, buy a Lindy. Our next game, I can't wait for this one. It's called Sydney's Las Vegas Adventure. This game, you're going to be on the edge of your seat. It pairs everyone's favorite little sister with an unlimited credit card, a suite in a hotel in Vegas with a statue of a weird-looking dog, and being kidnapped by her sister's fiance for a madcap strategy game that will keep you on your toes and ordering plenty of food from room service just to stay alive. Remember, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and Lindy is for players.
Good, good.
And the last release, Teach, I think you're really going to be drawn to this one. Because this one, these all use virtual reality and CD-ROMs. Like in 1995, which is the most cutting of technology, right? But this one really has some physical elements that I think, having watched you enjoy the game Just Dance years ago, you're going to love this one.
I love Just Dance, you know? And when they came out with the Lady Gaga beats.
Oh, my God. Oh, just the house is bopping. All right, so this last game, it's going to leave you breathless, literally. What game combines psychiatric fury, martial arts moves, and comfy sweatshirts? It's No More Victims.
Yes!
You're going to play as You're going to play as Kimberly, and you're staying at this glamorous campsite where you're being taught a variety of self-defense moves that turn into self-offense moves. Am I right? You're going to punch out your other players either virtually or amongst, if you have family, if you have enough headsets, you can fight your actual family members, which sounds like I know how you talked about your sister earlier, so maybe you could work out some aggression together. And every game comes with an official No More Victims white sweatshirt that you can wear while you play or out in your life.
Oh, good.
You're gonna get your steps in and your heart rate skyrocket.
So I don't mean to piss on a sponsor. I would never.
No.
But Mary, as you know, I have a No More Victims shirt. I do wear it in public. And let's just say it gets noticed.
I'm sure. Well, it's such a popular game.
Well, no, the font is threatening. And it makes people think you're a danger.
You know, the good people at Lindy Toys worked with nothing but the best at D&D advertising.
Good. And
I believe it was one of their advertising reps who's still alive who recommended the font.
Okay. Well, good, good. I'm glad that they're still alive. They didn't get taken out by their own fonts, but it just... I'm just... Listen. Get the hoodie. Wear the hoodie. But... just be mindful. Know your exits.
I just think that's great marketing because everyone's going to want to get their hands on No More Victims when it comes out. So you want to check out some demos, audio samples, maybe get some sweet pictures of the virtual reality headset. You can visit lindytoys.biz to see more. And with your first order, if you enter promo code CDROM, you get one free month of AOL.
Oh! What?
It's a free disc that's going to come with your order. Lindy Toys.
Wait, hold on. We got to get the deets on this free month of AOL.
Okay.
How many free minutes come in that month, Mary?
Boy, I don't know. What's is it like 60 a day? What's the normal allowance? I don't recall.
You tell me. It used to be when it first happened, get 5 free hours of internet time.
5 whole hours. Wow.
And then it like they kept upping it to try and get you. And then at the end there, they were like, just, you know what? Have a free fucking month. Just all month. Just log in. Don't leave. You're not going to have your landline. You're not going to have your regular phone.
You know what?
Dial in and stay.
I shouldn't tell you this. I shouldn't.
Oh, gosh. No, please, Mary. You've got it. You've got to tell the people.
I have really great news. So, you know, now again, if you enter promo code CDROM, you get 1 free month of AOL with your first.
Yes, right? yes.
There's another secret promo code.
Oh, don't go breaking my heart. Tell me.
If you want.
Yeah.
2 whole months of free AOL. You're going to enter promo code Nooner.
Shut the fuck up.
Lindy Toys, stop playing games. Start living them. Or can I play with your Lindy? So wait, seriously, how long does this show go on? How many episodes are there?
I told you this, right? So it goes to season 7 of the original run, but then there's the reboot season.
So there's how many reboot seasons?
Just the one so far.
So far.
Okay. But there's also, but then Mary, there's the Amazon has the true story of Melrose Place movie that we should cover.
Oh God. How long?
Yeah. And Models Inc. has to be covered too.
Wait, what the hell is Models Inc.?
It's a 2-season spinoff.
Of what? What did they?
Of Melrose Place from the Lady from Dynasty was on it, I think.
Lady from Dynasty, my God, this was like a whole industry.
And I do think 90210 to understand where this show came from is probably worth exploring.
I don't know if I agree with that.
And then when Allison left, she went to Ally McBeal.
Does it have anything to do with the contents of Melrose Place?
I just feel like, how do you really want to be an expert in this or not?
I mean, I think you know the answer to that.
Okay, so we're in for all of it.
Oh, God.